Good morning, everyone. My name is Taryn Kennedy. I'm a graduate student from UC Davis. This morning, I'm going to be talking about greenhouse gas emissions and mitigation strategies in agroecosystems in the state of California. I'm going to do this by way of research that's going on in Johann Six's agroecology lab at UC Davis. So to give you a sense of where we're headed this morning, first I'm going to talk about sources of greenhouse gases in the state of California. I'll review the substrates that go into nitrous oxide production, give you some highlights of potential agricultural mitigation strategies for nitrous oxide. I'll give you some data from modeling predictions in the Sacramento Valley. And then I have three case studies to share with you from our lab. And finally, I will give a summary of emission factors from the systems that we've been studying and then review the conclusions that we've drawn from our research. So we can identify the sources of greenhouse gases in the state of California, and we see that transportation is the largest player with 41%, and agriculture comes in at about 8%. In 2006, the state of California passed a piece of legislation called the Global Warming Solutions Act, which is aimed to bring greenhouse gas emissions in the state of California back to 1990 levels by the year 2020. And this has spurred a lot of research in the agricultural sector to try and get a handle on greenhouse gas emissions from agricultural systems to begin to quantify how much in terms of nitrous oxide is being released from agricultural systems. So we can further divide the composition of the 8% that's coming from agricultural systems into three major greenhouse gases that are sourced from agriculture. We see, as the previous speaker spoke about, methane is a large player, coming in around 37%, carbon dioxide around 12%, and indeed we see that nitrous oxide has the largest contribution at 50%. And that's where I'll be focusing my talk today. So we can recognize that nitrous oxide comes from fertilizer sources. Any source of nitrogen that's entering a system can be released or lost as nitrous oxide. And as far as we know, there are no known sinks in soils. So it's important then to look to the management practices that affect nitrogen levels within the soil. As a review, three main substrates go into the production of nitrous oxide. They include soil moisture, also known as water-filled pore space, inorganic nitrogen in the form of ammonium or nitrate, and soil organic carbon. And we see that these three factors are manipulated by agricultural management, such as irrigation, fertilization, and tillage. And these three substrates go into the nitrogen cycle and affect the rates of nitrification and denitrification. So different practices have been proposed for mitigating greenhouse gas emissions, and they include manipulations that affect soil nitrogen levels, such as fertigation or the ability to fertilize through the drip line within a system, or split applications, increasing the frequency of an application while reducing the amount with each application, reducing the overall fertilizer application rate across a growing season, incorporating manure or organic cropping into a system to slow the release of nitrogen, as well as including winter grain cover crops, be them grain or leguminous. We can also look to effects of management on soil carbon levels. Biochar application has been suggested for carbon sequestration, and it's still up for grabs how biochar affects greenhouse gas emissions in terms of nitrous oxide. Reduced or zero tillage affects soil organic carbon levels, including more hay and crop rotations, similar to the effect of a grain cover crop. Looking to take portions of a farm and set it aside to perennial grass or take it out of the annual rotation. And finally, including higher residue crops, be them above or below ground, for inputting more carbon into the soil. So let me walk you through this very dense graph. So what we have here is the effect of management changes on greenhouse gas emissions as modeled in the Sacramento Valley over 10 years. And so what we looked at was the effect of fertilizer, be it mineral or organic sourced, the presence of a cover crop, yes or no, and the type of tillage that was used, conventional or reduced tillage, and reduced tillage being reducing the frequency as well as the depth of tillage. And so we examined changes in these managements on three factors: change in global warming potential in CO2 equivalents, changes in soil organic carbon stocks, as well as changes in nitrous oxide emissions. And again, I remind you that this modeling effort took place over 7 different cropping systems. So it includes variation of cropping system, differences in soil type, as well as changes in climate from year to year across the 10-year period. And all of these values that you see are averaged across these 7 systems, and they are changes relative to the business as usual or conventional practice. So in the first line, we see with mineral reduction of 25%, that's a reduction from the business as usual and application rate. These are also relative to the business as usual, a lack of a cover crop, and the use of conventional tillage. So what we see when we look at nitrous oxide is that we reduce the mineral application rate by 25%, and we do see a reduction in nitrous oxide emissions. However, the error on that value is quite large. And when we break down that error, we see that it is primarily due to changes in climate from year to year. So you have a hot, dry summer one year, a wet, cool winter the next, and this is really affecting nitrous oxide emissions. And again, we have variation in soil type and differences across the cropping rotations. So we take this all into consideration when we're evaluating the error. However, nitrous oxide is highly variable, and this is something that we contend with when we're sampling and trying to get a sense in estimating these annual budgets of nitrous oxide. So we always have to keep that in mind when we're working with nitrous oxide, is the high variability. So again, we switch to organic-based fertilizer and the presence of a cover crop, and we see that we're doing a bit better with nitrous oxide, but again, that error is there, and so we don't have certainty. Going over to carbon, if you input or include a cover crop, we're doing much better here with the certainty around soil organic carbon levels in the soil. They're increasing as a result of using a cover crop within the rotation. When we go over to an organic fertilizer, in addition to the cover crop, we're doing much better again in increasing soil organic carbon levels. And so to increase soil carbon levels, you really need the input to be there in the form of a cover crop or in terms of an organic or fertilizer. So as we mentioned, nitrous oxide is highly variable, and that's due to the nature itself, as well as a lack of quantification in the literature. And so we see since 2009, we're doing quite well in terms of corn, rice, and wheat, and understanding emissions from those systems. In terms of alfalfa, cotton, and tomato, we have some data. But in 2009, we're quite lacking in perennial cropping systems. And since then, we have 2 that have been published from nut orchards and a lot in progress in vineyards. So in terms of trying to relieve the deficit of N2O data, it's important to pay attention to sampling protocols. And what we have here is a modeled graph of precipitation on the top. So we have rain coming down and emissions going up. And we see that nitrous oxide emissions respond to management events as well as precipitation events. So it's really important that we target our measures to intensively measure around these management events. So we see that spring tillage, fertilizer application, as well as fall tillage induced nitrous oxide fluxes. And so what we've done in our lab is shifting over to an event-based sampling and sampling very intensively following management events for 7 to 10 days on a daily basis, as well as going over to automated devices that are able to sample more than once a day. So what I want you to take from this graph is it's really important when you sample nitrous oxide. It makes a big difference throughout the year, as well as how frequently you sample following a particular event. So I'll take you to Davis, California. This is north of Davis in an almond orchard. This study has been taking place for a year. And just as we saw, we have the temporal variability of nitrous oxide. We also have spatial variability that we have to take into consideration when we're sampling. And so here we identified two functional locations that we anticipated to have different emissions based on management practices and where they exist within the field. So we measured at the tree row and within the tractor row. This is an image of some of our equipment. We use static flux chambers. We have both the automated system shown here as well as the manual static chambers. So this is how we display our data. And on the top, we have nitrous oxide emissions in relationship to the three environmental parameters that we measure simultaneously. So I mentioned the three substrates that go into nitrous oxide production. So we have nitrous oxide on the top in relation to water-filled pore space or soil moisture in the second portion of the graph, followed by nitrate concentrations and ammonium concentrations within the soil. And this graph is depicting emissions in the tree row. So as we mentioned, emissions are event-based, and so we see with the drip fertigations, we have a response in nitrous oxide in the tree row. We also see that water-filled pore space is between 40% and 80%. And also, we see changes in nitrate and ammonium levels. We had anticipated a flux with the first rain event in the fall. However, we did not see a significant flux in the tree row, nor did we see many changes in inorganic and concentrations. A microjet fertigation the following spring produced emissions in the tree row, and we also see changes in the mineral N concentrations. Turning now to the tractor row, so in between the trees, we see that the drip fertigations that are happening within the tree row are not affecting emissions in the tractor row. Again, we had anticipated that there would be emissions following the first rain event, but we didn't see that in the tractor row. Interestingly enough, we did see emissions in the tractor row in response to the microjet fertigation, indicating that some of the nitrogen from that fertigation event made its way out into the tractor row, inducing nitrification or denitrification. So we can summarize the data from this system and look at it in terms of spatial location as well as the calculated weighted cumulative value. And the weighted cumulative value is a way of representing the relative spacing of our functional locations where we've measured and calculating a cumulative value for the year. So we see here with the tree row, the emissions were greatest in the summer due to those fertigation events within the trees. In contrast, we have spatial variability and temporal variability expressed where emissions were highest in the tractor row in the winter. So again, indicating it's really important to sample throughout the year as well as identifying spatial locations within your field. So moving to a vineyard system, this project has been underway for 2 years. And again, we have functional locations identified within the vine and in the tractor row. And an additional comparison that was made within the vineyard was between conventional tillage and no tillage. And here we have nitrous oxide emissions for each functional location within the vine and the tractor row. And again, we see that they are event-based. And so within the vine, we have high emissions following the fertigation event. middle of the summer, and in the tractor row, the incorporation of a leguminous cover crop induced high emissions in the no-till system and also emissions in the conventional till system. And the presence of carbon and nitrogen that was made available by the incorporation of the cover crop induced another flux when water was added with the first precipitation event in June. So we can summarize the results for this system. And again, as I mentioned, we measured across 2 years. And it's typical in vineyard management to alternate the presence of a cover crop from year to year. So in 2009, the leguminous cover crop was present and incorporated in the spring. In 2010, the soil was fallow during the winter. And so we really see the effect of the leguminous cover crop in the functional location of the tractor row, increasing the nitrous oxide emissions in that position. And so a recommendation might be that instead of using a leguminous cover crop in a vineyard management system, to switch over to a grain cover crop, arguing that the vine is not able to access a lot of the nitrogen that's made available by the leguminous cover crop in the tractor row. And so a lot of the properties that we see beneficial from a cover crop could be attained using a grain cover crop and not having the input of nitrogen that is potentially lost as nitrous oxide. Turning over to an annual system, I'm going to take you through processing tomatoes and give you a little tutorial on how tomatoes are grown. And what we did is we looked at two typical management regimes and compared the emissions from both. And we looked at the standard practice, which is conventional tillage and furrow irrigation. And in this system, they rip and reform the beds on an annual basis. And there are two fertilizer application strategies used in the system. The bulk of the nitrogen is applied with a side dress application at the beginning of the season, and subsequent N application occurs through irrigation or water runs. In contrast, we looked at an integrated system which incorporates reduced tillage, again, reduced frequency and depth, especially due to the presence of a subsurface drip irrigation system. And this also requires that they preserve the planting beds from year to year. In the system, they also incorporated a winter grain cover crop or a triticale trios. And so in this system, they're able to fertigate, again, passing fertilizer down the drip line. So that's the fertilizer strategy for this system, as well as the accompanying irrigation strategy. So analyzing emissions on a per event basis, we had anticipated that irrigation and fertilization events would produce the highest fluxes in both systems. However, what we found was that the conventional system had the highest fluxes during fertilization events during the growing season and also the first rain event of the fall, happening in October. In contrast to our expectations, the conventional system had low fluxes for fertigation and irrigation events and actually had quite a high flux for harvest. And this may have been due to the incorporation of a mulcher on the back of a harvester where the farmer is able to mulch the crop residues, making carbon, nitrogen, and water available quite readily when those minced residues return to the soil surface. And again, with the subsequent rain event about a month later, adding water to those residues would induce another flux of nitrous oxide. But it's really interesting to divide emissions on a per event basis to try and tease apart which management events are producing the greatest fluxes within each management regime. We can compare spatial variability within each system, and we see that in the conventional system emissions were higher and more spatially variable than the integrated system. And in this system, I failed to address earlier, we identified three spatial locations relative to fertilizer and water application And we sampled at the berm, which was the center of the seed bed, on the side and in the furrow where the wheel traffic is. Looking at the cumulative emissions from this system, we see that the conventional system was about 3.5 times greater than the integrated system. Looking into the statistics for each field, the conventional system received 237 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare. In contrast, the integrated system had 205 kilograms of nitrogen applied. In the conventional system, that N was applied across 4 fertilization events. And in the integrated system, that N was applied across 8 fertigation events. And the tomatoes responded favorably in the integrated system with a higher yield. In addition, we looked at carbon dioxide emissions, and we see a similar trend with higher emissions in the conventional system. So we can summarize the annual nitrous oxide emissions across the systems that we've been studying in our lab, and we see that when calculating an emission factor, which is a way of expressing the amount of N fertilizer that's lost as nitrous oxide, the standard approach of 1% used by IPCC to calculate emissions on the back of the envelope, shall we say, has the potential to over or underestimate nitrous oxide emissions because there's a lot of variability across systems in emission factors as well as variability within systems. For example, this variability can be identified by looking at two systems here, and we see that their nitrous oxide emissions are quite similar. And this is between a walnut, a perennial system, and the integrated tomato system. So similar emissions on a seasonal basis, and yet the N input, the fertilizer input, is quite different between these two systems, and therefore the calculated emission factor are significantly different. So highlighting that, again, these using a 1% approach can over or underestimate emissions. So it's important to figure out other ways to quantify emissions, be it having a regional emission factor for a growing region or looking at a per cropping system basis. So in conclusion, nitrous oxide emissions from agriculture are significant, and unfortunately there are no simple solutions or silver bullets. As we see in some systems, cover cropping has the potential to increase or decrease emissions, and so it's really variable how mitigation strategies play out in certain systems. Secondly, as we look to characterize cropping systems and really get a handle on nitrous oxide budgets within them, it's important that we have intensive sampling surrounding events, event-based sampling, as well as thorough sampling throughout a calendar year. We see that due to the variability of nitrous oxide emissions and how they respond differently to management practices and environmental factors, simple emission factors have the potential to under and overestimate emissions. And we also see the possibility to reduce nitrous oxide via avenues other than simply reducing fertilizer and application rates. So I'd like to acknowledge quite a few positive, enthusiastic players in these projects, as well as recognize the California Energy Commission and the Packard Foundation for funding. And thank you for your attention, and I'll take any questions you might have. The only comparison that I have is in the tomato system where they're comparing the furrow and the drip irrigation. The same amount of water was applied across the growing season, but the frequency was greater in the drip irrigation system, you know, such that less water was applied more frequently. And so I think you have changes in soil wetting patterns that result from that irrigation type. And then that can affect the likelihood that there's nitrification versus denitrification. And if we identify that denitrification produces more nitrous oxide than nitrification, we might want to favor conditions for nitrification. So for all of these studies, we're sitting on farm and following management practices as they're happening on the ground by farmers whose fields we're working in. And so with the conventional system, the farmer applied the bulk of the fertilizer at the beginning of the season in a side dress application. And so I am unable to tease apart fertilizer strategy and irrigation strategy in these systems, because I feel like they're so coupled. And I don't know if this addresses your question.
Well, I guess what I'm wondering is, did you look at directly after these fertilization events? I know you showed some of that.
Yes.
But
I didn't show one similar to like I had in the almond orchard. And I will tomorrow in a session called Nutrient Losses, if you want to come. But so, yes, we did measure intensively following all fertigation and fertilization events in both systems and saw that the fertilization in the conventional system induced much higher fluxes on the order of 20 to 40 grams N2ON per hectare per day in comparison to 0 to 10 grams N2ON per hectare per day in the integrated system. So while the integrated system had more fertigation events throughout the season, again, they have 8 applications to address or apply that fertilizer, the emissions were lower with each event than in the conventional system. In the almond orchard where it was 0.8 or?
Thinking of the vineyard.
Within the vineyard?
Yeah. And I guess related to that, so when you do measure in between the rows, like the tractor, so do you consider the compaction of the tire tracks? Like they would tend to go always the same. Is that when the tire vineyard?
Yeah, the picture might highlight here. Oop. There we are. So we're sampling literally in the middle of the row. And so you could identify a third functional location in this system, like you're saying, a position where the wheel traffic is, and that would affect or increase soil compaction. We do measure bulk density and use that, you know, in incorporating water-filled pore space. But I agree that there would be additional location there. We were very surprised by the high rate from the incorporation of the cover crop. And I think that really indicates timing, you know, and when you incorporate the cover crop relative to how much moisture is in the soil, and then the precipitation event that followed really spiked another N2O flux. So this really highlights, you know, calls into question, do we need a leguminous cover crop in this system? You know, is it a carryover from a traditional management approach? You know, yes, cover crops have many positive benefits, but switching over to a grain might be more appropriate.